Welcome to The Ether. Today is Monday, March 14th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Have you heard about the new Terra Invest Strategy Discord server Orbital Command spun up? If you're looking for a chill place to chat about different Luna stacking strategies, or looking for some alpha, or if you're trying to find the best UST farms, or even if you just have a quick question you need answered, be sure to stop by TIS and say hi to the Orbital Command gang. Hell, I'm even in there sometimes when I'm not editing hours of CeFi spaces. You can find me in that server chatting about NFTs and answering basic Terra Luna questions. The link to the server is in the show notes, and for more information, check out orbitalcommand.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, part one of a two-part multi-chain live space, Rune, Luna, all things Thorchain, and more. Let's take a listen.
Hey, how's it going?
Yo, what's up?
Not much. Ready to chat all things multi-chain, Rune, Luna, everything else that I'm thinking about 24/7.
Just another day in Thorchain land.
I know. Let's the first minute of another potentially 3-hour marathon.
it always goes so long. Hopefully Chad can join us later. I know he has a meeting, but
yeah, for people just kind of jumping in, these ones are very much like no agenda, just hang out, chat, whatever. So anyone can just come up and we can all just see where the conversation goes. And, you know, questions can be super beginner, anything really, just to hang out, not like some kind of official announcement sort of thing. So yeah, just anyone can kind of come up as they please. But there is a lot going on, so there's definitely a lot to be excited about and kind of stuff we can cover. I was just seeing that tweet about, I don't know if it just happened or is it just about to happen, but hitting 100 nodes is happening like basically right now. So that's pretty freaking exciting.
Yeah, it's it'd be really interesting to see that hit like the 120. Like, of course, we'll have to hit 100 first, but 120 is when the third Asgard vault would shard, right? So it brings a little more scaling to the network and able to process more transactions. So really good to see that the network is like growing more decentralized and the node count is just continuing to increase on every turn.
Right. Yeah. 120, as far as I understand, is the max for three, which it's at, well, it's currently at three. So that would
Be four.
right. That's when it would have to go to four to go past 120.
Yes.
I think there's still like a soft cap, if you will, at 100. So we might see it stall there. I'm not sure if they've already increased that to 120 or if we might see it hang out at 100 before moving onward to 120. I don't know if you've heard any different on that, but
yeah, I'm not sure. It would be a good question for Chad.
Yeah, totally. I believe that's what I heard though. So, oh shoot, looks like my recording is not working here. What's going on? Let me try to sort this out for a second so we can have this recorded.
Yeah. I see we have TJ up here. Or actually, sorry, Fox was first. Go ahead, Fox.
Oh, all good. It's a pretty quick question. Just wanted to say just excuse me, just how electric the atmosphere has been pretty much since have been released, and you know, the excitement going into Luna, and then of course the Thor 5 PDF being mentioned. I've just loved the atmosphere and all the spaces you guys have been hosting, so thank you for everything you guys are doing. Yeah, just the quick question was, do you guys have any insight as to when Chad might be releasing this PDF and when we can actually start reading it?
All I've heard is soon. again, the initial release of the document was just for like the core contributors and protocols that have already launched on Thorchain to kind of review and kind of get their brains wrapped around it first. But again, there is going to be a public release of that document pretty soon. I don't know exactly when that'll be, but I know it's already in the works.
Yeah, just to clarify like a little bit, it kind of became like a pretty hilarious meme and all of that. And I know I contributed a little bit in that as well. But just to clarify, you know, the intention from the team was really just to, you know, have like a bit of like a peer review before it kind of goes out to everyone else. And it wasn't meant to be like something super secret by any means. Like most of the stuff has already been talked about very publicly, like on these spaces, or through various tweet threads and replies with Chad and stuff like that. So, you know, just to clarify, like, I know it's fun and it's kind of turned into a meme, but it's not like there's some incredibly secret info. It's just more of, it's more of what you've been hearing and getting excited about. It's just kind of like, let's get eyes on the official doc before it kind of like really goes out there as like an official publication of what it is, you know? So, it's really exciting, but yeah, it's kind of become a bit of a meme. So just want to clarify that a little bit.
I appreciate it. I'm pretty much taking it as such. And I totally applaud this effort to actually get in front of some eyes first and some well-respected individuals who might be able to poke some holes in it before it gets released to the public. So I totally get it. Just getting antsy myself. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, totally. It's very exciting. I don't blame you. And yeah, I don't know if they put a hard date, but it sounds soon. Like I wouldn't be surprised if it was, you know, within a week or so, even. Not to put a date on something that I don't know, of course, but I think it's going to be sooner than later. I wouldn't sweat it. But it is super exciting, and just like I'm still trying to get my head around all that stuff, even the stuff that Chad has talked about on Spaces. But the design is super out there. And I think that's going to be the difficulty. And that's kind of why it's going through this current phase is, you know, sorting out like, how do even people that are involved get their heads around it? But then after that, how do you kind of condense this into a way that everyone can understand? Because Thorchain's already complex, but this is like very complex. It's a struggle to understand for sure.
Yeah, and the implications are just so wide. That's what I think I really love about most about ThorFi is that, you know, again, they've modeled the stablecoin after like the UST / Luna kind of burn mechanism, and it's just so cool to see such a interesting design in addition to what we already have.
Yeah, I mean, the thought of burning Rune on top of the insane tokenomics that Rune already has is pretty mind-boggling. It's like you took arguably the first or second best tokenomics already, and then you paired it with the also number one or two best tokenomics, and you're like, let's just tack that on top of this. So it makes it absolutely absurd. And also, like, it's linked to how the lending is going to be utilized versus Thor savings. So there's an interesting dynamic there where, like, and this is where it gets kind of tricky, and we don't have to go into super details, but like the amount in Thor savings versus the amount of loan, that ratio is kind of what determines how much Rune is being burned, because Thor USD is being used for that. So it'll kind of be this like market determined thing based on how desirable is Thor savings, and how does that outweigh the amount being loaned against collateral. And that's going to kind of like set the APY of Thor savings and at the same time determine how much Rune is burned. So it all kind of comes together in this pretty crazy way.
Yeah, exactly. If for anyone who hasn't seen some of the APYs recently, I recently just like added Rune BTC yesterday just to see how much the APY was. And it's insane. Like the incentive pendulum is just swinging so heavily towards the LPs right now. So if anyone's looking to like learn how to add LP or like has any questions about Thorchain, be sure to check out LP University, which is in the crowd here as the first one. And if there's any questions about ThorSwap, be sure to check out their Discord for any questions about doing some transactions over there. But yeah, I mean, the APYs are just crazy right now. With in addition with the synth volume, it's just increasing the APY more than 8%. It's absolutely ridiculous. I saw that ThorSwap just added the synth volume chart. So it's cool to see how much volume is coming through there.
Yeah, it's actually insane. So in the last 24 hours, there were $10 million of synth trade volume. And I think it's somewhere around 34 to 40 million of total volume. So that means synths are already like a third of all transactions, which is like a huge, wild success for them only being live for what, like 5 days now? Pretty epic launch.
And I think as the caps get lifted and the synths like are released from the 5%, you're probably going to see that amount of volume actually increase more, right? Because there's that artificial cap right now of 5% of the pool depth at the moment, just for security reasons and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, that'll probably scale over time. And then in addition to that, the pools themselves will scale over time. So it should definitely increase. I'm going to pull that up to see the utilization. It's if you're at app.thorswap.finance, it's just /synth. And then you can see like the depth and the utilization of synths, which is kind of cool to check out. Let's see. So yeah, it looks like a few of them are basically right up at the cap already. That's pretty crazy. DAI, BCH, and USDC looks like they're already hitting the 5%. Interesting seeing BCH up there, but I guess that's because the liquidity is probably lower.
Yeah. So yeah. The potential for utilization is already quite low.
Exactly. Yeah. You can hit it with less total value. But
BUSD BUSD and Bitcoin are like really high, and the supply is quite high as well. So
right,
that's quite interesting to see.
Yeah, that's actually probably the best part to look at, because those are some of the deepest pools, and you're seeing them at 3.6 and 2.2% utilization in less than a week. So you can definitely imagine it getting up to those 5% caps. I think the real answer here is scaling liquidity depth. That'll be the fun part, you know, which synths do as well. But then it's kind of like a ratio of only so much synth can be minted against that much liquidity depth. So it's like raising it, but it's also like that ratio. I don't know. My math is bad in that regard, but like you can kind of imagine what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think that's going to coincide nicely with like the lifting of the caps during Terra integration.
Yeah. Yeah. Super excited for Terra. Feels like it's been right around the corner for quite a while.
Yeah, and I saw, what's his name, Arandis from Nine Realms. He posted the Terra hard fork information.
Yeah, as far as I've heard, like the hard fork should be, well, the testing stuff is going to be happening this week, and then the hard fork
today.
Is probably for testnet?
It's for testnet, it was today, for stagenet is tomorrow, and then the earliest for chaosnet was, or production, is the 21st, so in a week from now, is what I read on the document.
Yeah, 21st was the same I read. So yeah, doing all the testing this week leading into that. So, and then that's really the last step. So it just depends on, you know, if there's anything to kind of clean up or whatever to get ready, maybe a few days of stability before it. But yeah, it feels like it's been right around the corner, and it still feels like that. But the longer this goes on, the closer we're actually getting. So pretty exciting. And again, anyone can hop up here. These are like super just casual hangouts. So, you know, don't feel like you can't ask any question, beginner, non-beginner, whatever, ThorChain or related, you know, whatever you want to get into, really. Just brought up JW. How's it going? Not sure if your mic is working. Not hearing anything on my end.
Yeah, same. I see we have Fury here as well. If you want to come up, Fury.
See a lot of Terra profile pictures.
Maybe Seffy or Danka will join.
For sure.
Did you see the 1 million bet that Dokkan made with Kobe?
I did, yeah. Is Kobe like, did Kobe take the other side of that bet, or is he like the
I can't remember.
I think it was some other, I forget
his name. Yeah, it was the ducky guy. I always forget his name. Algo Sensei or something like
right,
that.
Right, yeah. It was him. And then I saw somebody else was posting that said they would take the same bet, but with 10 million. I don't know if that went through or not, but kind of crazy. What do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think Doquan's been trying to get someone to take that side of the bet for a while. So I think he's trying to shut some people up and be like, hey, look, Luna's not going to fail. So, I mean, it's a pretty big bet on the success of Luna, right? So, hey, Fury, how's it going?
Good. I was actually just, I had to do some dishes or else I was going to get bitched at. So I was just finishing up while you guys were starting. But I was going to ask you guys, because I was thinking about this earlier when I was running some errands. As far as like the philosophy of Rune and Bitcoin, do you guys feel like Thorchain is the closest thing in terms of decentralization after Bitcoin?
Yeah, I guess you could think of it in a couple different ways, right? Because in terms of the network itself, it's probably hard to make that argument just because of there being so many less nodes and participants and things like that. In terms of like the ethos and kind of like the design, it feels very close to Bitcoin because it's kind of just like maintaining decentralization throughout all of crypto instead of using centralized exchanges and whatnot. But yeah, I don't know if it would be like arguably, you know, there's kind of some kind of what, like exponentially declining curve of like how much more decentralization you get per node and things like that. So I don't think Thorchain would ever get up in that regard. But like philosophically, 100%, it does feel like an extension of Bitcoin, in a way, kind of like helping to fulfill like the original, maybe not vision of just Bitcoin, but like the multi-chain world. Like as soon as you had anything but Bitcoin, Thorchain kind of became necessary to maintain the original ethos of crypto between those, because otherwise it's like, even if you just have Bitcoin and Ethereum, if there's no trustless way of exchanging between them, then you end up going to through some kind of centralized custodial, trust-based whatever. So yeah, I do think there's a big parallel there, and it does feel like the spiritual extension of it in a way.
Yeah, I think what I would say about that is like, I've seen some of the Nakamoto efficiency, I believe is what kind of is one of the measurements for decentralization. One was recently done on Thorchain, maybe like a week or two ago. And I think the coefficient was about 20. So it was quite high and the number of nodes is still continuing to increase. And I think, who was it? Vitalik Buterin was just saying like, oh, like bridges are really insecure. Like, you know, he was basically advocating for Thorchain without saying it was Thorchain. Effectively plugging into all of these layer one like blockchains and having the ability to swap between them in a trustless manner, right? So you don't have to trust these insecure bridges that are just giving you IOU tokens on the other chain, right?
Yeah, 100%. And just like with all the other things going on, it seems like the potential space that Thorchain can fill over the next like year or two, whether it's just being almost like a savings account with all the stuff with different banks all over the world, centralized exchanges, you had MetaMask like cutting off entire countries. Like it feels like we sort of have to take more of a decentralized approach if we really do want this to work out, which is not something that I felt a year ago or even 6 months ago.
Yeah, I think it's like very much necessary. And I think that's kind of like a key part of like the Thorchain thesis, right? It's like, if you think it's okay to just use a centralized exchange, well, then you really don't need Thorchain, I guess. Right. I mean, if you just want to put your trust into all of that. But, I think the idea that is so beautiful is like rebuilding that system, but just at a protocol level, like something that nobody can shut off. No one person or team has direct control over. It's really like kind of just beautiful. Like I almost don't even have another word, but just when you really think about it, it's like kind of mind blowing how crucial it feels too. Like in a darker sense, like, you know, when regulation does or does not come and get more aggressive or things like that, Thorchain kind of stands to protect, more than just Thorchain, but really all the ecosystems that are that are connected through it, and allowing like the trustless continuation of all those chains. Yeah. Logan, what's up?
Yo, yo, just watching this price action, man. Seems like I was in the right spot at the right time. Anyway, so my question is this, when we do this integration with Terra, right? When obviously this Cosmos, whatever update happens, and then the integration will take place. My question is obviously there needs to be that ratio of more rune to collateralize the, whether it's like liquidity pools or the assets that are coming into to Thor chain. So like when Luna and UST get integrated with Thor chain, does that mean automatically there's like how much like UST is actually going to Thor chain? Is it like, is there a defined amount? Is it like a billion? Is it a couple billion? And then does that in turn mean that immediately that amount of rune needs to be bought in order to support that? Or is there already a surplus that's accumulated by the validators that has quite been tapped into? I'm just curious about that integration and what the logistics look like to actually accomplish that.
Right. So it can't go from like zero to billions overnight, because you're right there. That ratio always has to be in check, but in the current state, it's not maxed out. So when it is maxed out, that means nobody can add liquidity. And we used to see that a lot, because we used to have these artificial, well, we still do technically, but we had these artificially like very low caps, which would cap how much liquidity would be allowed in the pools. So they would almost, for a very long time, they were basically perpetually maxed out. And then they'd be like, hey, we just raised the caps. And then everyone would rush in over at 2 hours, and then the caps would be full again. And that cap was
artificially. What does that mean when it's maxed out, though? Like what would happen in a transaction? Give me an example.
It just meant that you couldn't add more liquidity to the liquidity pools. So everything was still running exactly the same and good to go. But if you wanted to come and LP, you would basically just be like turned down. Like it would be as if it was like you were trying to get into a place and it was at capacity.
Let's say it was maxed out and I tried to deposit more like Luna into an LP. It would just say, hey, this is capped. Like once the Luna rune pool is activated, if it was maxed out and I tried to deposit Luna, it would not allow me to do so.
Correct. Right. And the interfaces would probably have like a warning showing. It would be like, hey, liquidity pools are currently full. But yeah, just to kind of note this more detailed, is like right now there's actually plenty of space. So that's perfect for the Terra integration to come up. Then there's like the incentive pendulum, which helps regulate this, which means right now more of the system income from swap fees and block rewards, more of that is being shifted towards the LPs right now because the network is over bonded, which is actually like a really awesome place to be. I mean, maybe if you're a node operator, maybe you don't want that because you're earning a little bit less. But for everyone else, it's actually great. It means the LPs are being extra incentivized, which means people are being, there's more reason for people to add liquidity. So that's the position it's in right now. And then even with the current cap, you're seeing like, what's the percentage? It's
does a cap happen though, because there's not enough rune that's bought in order to support the ratio? Is that why the cap happens?
Bonded. So the rune bonded to the nodes is what needs to be in a certain ratio, right? Got in it. Comparison to the amount of non-rune that's locked into the protocol. So right now, I would say that we're in what we would call an inefficient state. So we're not economically in danger of an attack vector right now, but we're inefficient, as in we don't have enough liquidity. The other scenario is when there isn't enough rune bonded, and then there's too much liquidity that's been added, right? So that's when you're in sort of a unsafe network.
But would a validator need to then bond more rune? Like, is the bonding process like they buy more rune and then they just kind of lock it up, or what is that bonding process?
Yeah. So in that, when it swung the other way, the incentive pendulum would be the opposite of what it is right now, which would mean then there would be more incentive on the node side, which would help more people either become node operators or more competition for the nodes to stay an active node operator, because otherwise they'll get churned out where they wouldn't be earning any rewards. So that's kind of what keeps it in check is, yeah, they have to be bonding 2 times the value of the non-rune that they're securing. The other piece of this is like when all this stuff is happening, like say a bunch of, you know, non-rune is flooding into the liquidity pools, that also puts buy pressure on rune through the liquidity pool itself. And then keep in mind as well is like, let's say hypothetically you're a node and you're bonded, you're bonding, just to make the math easy, 1 million rune. And that's like worth $7 million or whatever, right? If the rune price goes up, then that node bond security value just went up a ton too, without any more quantity of rune rushing in. So one of the biggest things that determines like the value of the security bond is the price of rune itself. So that's one of like the most obvious ways that it ends up kind of scaling is, you know, if rune starts taking off, then nodes don't even need to add more quantity of rune to necessarily have a way higher security cap.
So when you, so basically it's the dollar amount of rune versus that, like that's what, so when the 2-to-1 ratio, it's basically at all times it has to be a rune dollar amount is 2 times greater than what it's basically protecting or what it's backed up against. So if rune just shoots off in price, you wouldn't necessarily ever have to bond more rune, is what you're saying?
Right. So technically it's in terms of rune, but yeah, I mean, you can think of it that way because the non-rune is still paired with rune as well in the liquidity pool. So it's kind of like 2 of rune bonded to 1 of rune in the liquidity pool is what's like kind of how the cap is determined. The cap is actually determined like in terms of rune. But yeah, like the math kind of works out the same. However you kind of, because rune has a price in dollars too, so it all kind of balances out.
So like example with the Luna rune pool, the LP, with that scenario, there needs to be for every $1 worth of Luna, there needs to be $2 worth of rune that's backing it. Correct.
In the nodes, correct.
Yes, yeah, in the nodes.
And one more, but if
a validator has a node. And let's say that the price 10x is on rune, they're not going to have to, they're essentially from the levels they're at right now, they wouldn't necessarily have to bond anymore because again, the price is appreciating is what
correct.
I'm getting at.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. And, yeah. If anything over time, maybe they'll even need to bond less quantity.
Yeah. They, so they could unbond and still be compliant essentially with the system. Yeah.
Correct.
Though the other thing at play there is the nodes are really in competition with each other. And this is one of like the interesting security elements of Thorchain is every 3 days, roughly some nodes, churn out, meaning they're like not currently like they still have their bond there. They're still like, they're like on the sidelines kind of. And then you have the ones that are churned in, which are actively earning rewards and all of that. So there's this constant competition happening there. And that's based on, you know, like their performance, of course, like if they were to get slashed for any reason, that would knock them down. But even without that, there's competition just in terms of the amount of rune bonded. So that's what we're seeing right now, especially as we hit this like semi cap at either 100 or 120 nodes. You're going to see the nodes competing to bond more and more to which is also more buy pressure on rune. Because they want to make sure that they can continue being an active node.
Mm-hmm. And so something I wanted to just jump in there really quick was if you go to ThorSwap and you look at one of the statistics called the incentive pendulum, that's effectively just the cap, right? So if you noticed about a week or two ago before rune started pumping really hard, that incentive pendulum was or cap percent was about 80-85%. It's now at 74%. So that's just kind of like a really good visualization of like, you know, as the rune price increases, less bond is technically needed, but of course the bond wars are still happening between the nodes to keep in the network and to keep earning rewards for your node.
Yeah, and that's even with non-rune liquidity being added, the value of the node bond like went up more proportionally to that. So therefore, the like the utilization, like up to the max cap is actually a lower percentage right now, even though TVL increased and everything.
So let me ask this, the last question that I'll ask, as far as security goes. So if a validator has like more rune, as almost like collateral in the ratio, let's say instead of having like a 2-to-1, let's say they had like a 3-to-1 or like a 5-to-1, right? They just had a ton of rune on their balance sheet almost, that was bonded. Does that make them more secure and also more attractive if you were looking at like who to almost, I don't know if it's like stake with, or is there a benefit in that with, again, like one has more rune, which makes them more attractive because they're more secure? Does it work that way?
So yes and no, sort of, but like it, from the user side, there's no decision to be made like that, because there's no sort of like delegated staking, anything like that. You know, technically you could call Thorchain like a proof of stake network, or more technically proof of bond. The difference is that all of that side is happening by node operators that are putting up 100% of that validator. Like, you can't delegate 1,000 rune to a validator. Like, that validator has to put up all 500,000 rune or whatever themselves, mm-hmm. or through some trusted group or friends or something like that. What was the other part of the question?
I see what you're saying, though. From a user's perspective, like for me as an investor, I'm not a node operator. There is no, like, I can't pick and choose. You know, it's just
correct.
Like, you have to qualify. Like, the only way you qualify to run a node is if you have the capital and you're willing to put it up. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly.
Some people are going to put up more, some people are going to put up less, but there's a mandatory ratio that needs to be met. I totally
get it. I remember the first part now. Yeah. Like, so actually, this was a recent vote by the node operators to allow the rewards to kind of scale a little bit based on how much bond there is, though there's like a cap on that. Meaning they can, it's kind of like a decreasing thing. Like, so if they bond twice the amount, I believe they're not getting twice the rewards, but they're getting a bit more rewards. And then that kind of caps out at a level to make sure that one node is not controlling too much liquidity. So it's kind of kept in check in that regard. But for the most part, if a node is way over bonding, they're basically just ensuring themselves that they won't get churned out. Because, you know, if you're like the number one highest bond node, then you're essentially guaranteed that you're going to stay churned in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Cool.
How is the liquidity distributed across the nodes?
So one thing to suggest, just to kind of really get into the weeds of that stuff, is I would check out Grassroots Crypto YouTube channel. Cause he honestly can explain this even better than I can, for sure. Does some like really good breakdowns, but basically each node, controls like various chain addresses for all the different like liquidity that it's holding, meaning it has like a Bitcoin address, an Ethereum address, all of that. And that is kind of being like kept in balance with, the other vaults, the Asgard vaults, which is what all the nodes kind of like all together control. And I believe that's roughly in a 50-50 ratio between like the mega vaults and then like the individual vaults. So basically each individual node is, well, all those nodes are coming together to individually have half the liquidity. And that's used like for the outbound transactions and stuff like that. And then those are being rebalanced with the mega vaults. Altcoin Asian, anything to add on that?
Nope. Yeah, that's basically correct.
Awesome. Thanks. And thanks for doing these, Chad. Sorry if I bumped in a little bit there. I just thought it was pertinent.
No worries.
No, go for it. Like, these are just open. So if anyone's up here, just feel free to
Is there ever gonna be like staking rewards with rune? Because I've had a lot of people reach out and ask on my tweets, like, can I stake my rune? And obviously the way it's currently set up is no, but is there some type of way to get yield on your native rune that's possibly in the pipeline?
Yes. So what you're referring to is single-sided staking of rune to essentially earn more rune. There is a proposal called iRune that's effectively this. The thing that needs to be solved, though, is how to make the rune that is single-sided staked productive. And so far, I haven't heard anything about that. Chad, I don't know if you have any more information, but that's as far as I know. The current proposal for iRune is a potential Thorify feature that would allow you to earn rune by staking it essentially single-sided.
What would make it productive? Like, what does that exactly mean? Like, utility to benefit the blockchain somehow? Is that what you kind of mean?
Correct. When I say productive, what I mean is, like, for example, the currently native rune can be used in three ways. So that's transaction fees, using it as an LP, and then the third one is just using it to bond into a node. So we want the rune tokens that we have within the ecosystem to actually be productive. So it's actually helping the network reduce the slippage. Ensure it's securing the network, incentivizing more trading, right? So that's what I mean by more productive.
Right, yeah, great answer. And this is why single-sided staking doesn't exist right now, because it's not, like what? How would it work? Like, would it just be inflationary yield just to print rune and reward people for staking it? Like, but for what is the question, right? So either there's kind of like two potential solutions, and one would be, is there a way to do some sort of like delegated staking towards the security side, right? Like, can you put up 1,000 or 100 or 10,000 rune and have that go towards the security bond side of the network? Like, that would be very useful, because then that kind of increases the potential for liquidity, all the stuff we were talking about a couple minutes ago. The problem with that is, like, it doesn't work with the current, it doesn't work with like the inherent security model of Thorchain. Like, the exact same thing that makes it so cool and so, like, it makes the whole economic incentive model work is the same reason why that idea is not so straightforward. Because now suddenly you have a node that has like 10,000 rune from a whole bunch of different people. And if they've put up less rune personally than what they're controlling, well, now they're no longer disincentivized to. Like, now they have an incentive to steal, basically. So it kind of breaks that model. But there is like talks around this stuff, like the
I mean, I went from staking the vast majority of my Luna to unstaking it and just being way more of a degenerate with Anchor. And it was like a slow kind of like, all right, I'll just do a third. And then it was two thirds. And then it was more than two thirds of my Luna, you know, essentially using it as dry powder to then, you know, invest into other opportunities at a somewhat safe level, you know, and keep cash on the sideline. So I think it's just DeFi in general, like the staking is, it's cool, but it's not necessary if there are ways that you can leverage. Like, at the end of the day, what do you want? You want more rune. So if there's a capability to be able to leverage your rune and take a loan off of it to get more rune, that's essentially like getting prepaid staking rewards if you do it at a somewhat non-aggressive level. Like, that's just kind of how I looked at it with Luna. Like, okay, well, I could, you know, wait an entire year to get 10% APY on, let's say it was 1,000 Luna. So that's like 100 Luna in a year. Or I could take out, 20%. LTV and get that like right away, or leverage a portion of my holdings and get that right away instead. So like, that's kind of where my mind goes, is accumulating as much rune as I can at a lower level in price with dry powder, if that makes sense. And like, I guess that'll most likely be a part of with what Thorfy is. That is it a protocol that's being launched? Is it like native, or is it third party, or how does that work?
It's built into to Thorchain protocol itself. And yeah, so that will definitely address a lot of like the borrowing and lending. And I don't know if fixed rate, so there will be fixed rate yields on other assets as well. But for Rune itself, that's kind of still up in the air as to when something like that would come. But it might be like iRune, like Altcoin Asian was saying, which would, like, in theory, allow you to just earn straight on Rune. By the way, just to close up that last thought, the other way to do it would be if there was a way to split the liquidity pool such that like one person takes one side and one person takes the other side. could be an interesting idea that's looked at later. But yeah, with ThorFi, you know, it will become more useful to you in the way you're describing in terms of loans, because the loan collateral is going to be LP units, meaning all loan collateral is half rune, meaning you'd be taking a loan against Luna rune or BTC rune, which will be really, really exciting. But yeah, as for now, like, you can't necessarily do these things, but it's definitely coming with ThorFi.
So there's no leverage in the current system right now on Rune?
Not yet.
Yeah, no.
Got it. Well, that's about to change then.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a bunch of DGens are going to be sliding right.
No, it'll be insane. And just to clarify, like we get really excited about the ThorFi stuff, but like, this is a ways out. Like, we're just hardly going to see the design for the first time. Like, it's really exciting, but you know, this one's not like right around the corner. Like, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening with ThorChain sooner than ThorFi, but at the same time, it's like the most exciting part, at least in my eyes. So it's fun to get excited. But
what would you say ETA, like 6 months? Or
I think Chad B said like maybe 4 months, but you know, like with developer stuff, like I'm sure that's like semi a shot in the dark
That's like 4 years in crypto, bro.
Yeah. So, you know, I would just say like, you know, this year, tentatively.
The good thing is that some of the code has already been written, because Chad B kind of got not shy, but he jumped the gun and he wanted to write the code so we could get it out faster. Now, the next part is effective for ThorFi. The first part was the synths, right? So all of the arbing and fast trading is already available. The next part, which is effectively the bedrock of the next features, is going to be the Thor USD, so the stablecoin that has like the mint burn mechanisms. And then that's going to lead into like the lending, the borrowing, and then the fixed savings accounts. But yeah, so really it's just Thor USD is really the next major milestone, in addition to mainnet, of course, which will
why would you want a Thor stablecoin? Like, I see the value in having it vertically integrated, right? And there's like, you can kind of do more with tokenomics, but wouldn't it make more sense to use UST, which is like, I don't know, that burns. So is the main reason for the burning of Rune, that's why there's a unique kind of benefit in that sense? Because obviously if UST was widely adopted on Thor, it would be burning Luna, not Rune. So is that the main reason?
So Thor USD and UST like really have quite a different mission, in that UST's mission is to be like a globally adopted payment system, whereas Thor USD really has no ambition for that whatsoever. It's more so that it's like built into the design of this crazy like loan collateral versus borrow model. Like, it's kind of like, if you think of how Anchor works in a way, like Thor USD is just kind of inherent to how those products will be built. But you could, you know, if you take a loan, technically you're going to be taking the loan by minting Thor USD. And you know, like, they can't just, I don't know, I guess it doesn't make sense to use like an external protocol for that and stuff like that. Whereas Thor USD will be set price internally, like by its own pools and all of that. But it's really more of this internal thing. And then you could instantly have that swapped to UST for actual usage and stuff like that. But, you know, Thor USD isn't aiming to be like a payment system. It's more of just like a required part of the design for the lending and borrowing and savings model, as far as I understand it. And if Chad B comes in here later, which he might, he would be able to explain this stuff much further. Like, we're still trying to get our heads around it to some extent, but yeah.
So then it's more of like an internal product that helps utility of the platform rather than an external product that's meant for like mass adoption outside of the platform.
Right. Yeah. It's really like, at least, especially just starting out, you know, the intention is it's necessary for ThorFi, but it's not, you know, trying to be used on a debit card to buy a hot dog or whatever with Thor USD. Yeah.
Is it a decentralized algorithmic stablecoin, or is there like a set like 1-to-1 ratio with US dollars, or like what is it kind of collateralized by, do you know?
Burn to Mint. Yeah, so it's very similar to Luna UST in that regard. There's some more weird stuff going on that I won't try to explain yet, not because it's hidden, but because I can hardly understand it yet. But Chad B is going to be talking a lot more of that if he comes in or on other spaces and things like that. But there's some sort of basically it's a burn to mint against Rune with some other sort of dynamics there, but at a fundamental level, yeah.
But yeah, the end goal, of course, of all this would be with just like how as the UST adoption for Terra and Luna occurs, more Luna gets burned. It's the same concept. So as more people lend, borrow, and use a savings account, effectively the burning of Rune is going to outpace the minting of Rune through the mint burn mechanism. That's kind of like the high level TLDR of ThorFi in the end.
And it's actually the adoption of the lending and savings that burns Rune. So, because those are going to be like kind of the only use case for Thor USD. So it only burns Rune if there's a lot of usage of Thor savings specifically. The lending actually mints, arguably mints Rune, whereas the savings side burns Rune. And then there are kind of some like dynamics to keep those two systems in check. Again, through incentives, which is just like kind of back to the core ThorChain model. So through the incentives, it will always make sense for Thor savings to be like the hot product. Like basically the APY of Thor savings would like start really high and then go really low as it's utilized and kind of find this equilibrium, at which point it would basically for certain be net negative on the Rune supply versus how much is being used for the loan side. It's a lot, but it'll hopefully we'll figure out like simpler explanations and stuff.
So I had a question, like when we talk of the integration between the Luna USD and Thor chain, so will the Thor chain USD will be like one-to-one swappable with the Luna USD? And if that is the case, let's say somebody, you know, swap Luna USD with the Thor chain USD, then will it increase the Rune supply? Like, let's say I convert 1 million, you know, Luna USD into 1 million Thor USD, and like, will it lead to increase in the supply of the Rune token?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably one better for core dev Chad B than I. But as far as I understand, I don't think Thor USD will actually have a normal liquidity pool. I think
it won't.
It will just have.
It's just ahead. It's like a virtual pool, but you can't participate like as an LP in that pool. So you can't actually go in and swap, I don't believe. I'm not sure how the exact mechanism works there, but that's from my understanding, that's how it would work.
I mean, if that will be there, then it would be like, you know, a kind of competition that, you know, Thor holder will try to dump the Thor USD into the Luna USD. And if we have like, you know, like the other way around, this could be there. So that's what like I was wondering, because if we have like more of Thor native token, like then we have like, you know, less of like Thor USD. So I was wondering if that is somewhere related. So
I mean, at the very least with the burn mechanism, if there's more demand for Thor USD, then even if Rune is involved there, it's going to be involved in a deflationary way, meaning with more Thor USD, the Rune supply would go down.
Okay.
Right, it basically has to be net negative. I don't think there's much of any case for it becoming inflationary due to this, just because of the way like the dynamics between lending and saving will work. It basically just incentivizes it such that it will be deflationary. But that's an interesting question about like, you know, swapping UST to Thor USD. That's basically all I can say for now, though.
Chad, one thought on the Rune staking that was brought up. At the very least, I wonder if there would be a way to do Rune staking in such a manner that it's kind of like, I don't know if you've been following what Carter Wetzel and the Shade Protocol has been doing, but they're one of the income streams for a Shade staking, which is a protocol on Secret Network, is actually arbitraging the silk peg. And so, like, the basically, if you're a shade staker, then the money that's in this, in the like treasury and in the staking pool, or the assets that are there, get used to arbitrage the peg, and it's built into the protocol that pool of liquidity that's like in the staking and stuff has like a certain amount of priority over any other arbitragers that would come in. So it's like 50% or something like that. Anyways, just might be an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, Shade is really interesting. I got to talk with him on Space actually, which was really cool. Definitely trying to follow that. As far as I understand, with Thor USD, there is sort of a dynamic like this, which increases the fees to burn or mint it based on the peg itself. Basically, another thing to keep the peg super tight. But as far as I know, those fees are planning to be distributed into a Thor USD vault, which would be kind of like a not fixed, like not anchor style, but like a way to just earn on Thor USD itself. But that is an interesting concept. Like, yeah, I wonder what Chad B would have to say about that if that could be used to incentivize Rune rather than incentivize Thor USD. But I would imagine it might have something to do with just like how that Thor USD is being utilized, and is it supporting the peg, and like maybe there's a reason to have that Thor USD vault like kind of stable or something.
Right. Yeah. I was also curious about like Thor Chain's relationship with IBC and Cosmos. I know like some people sometimes say it's a Cosmos chain, but yeah, just kind of curious what all is going on there. If you have some more clarity on that, you could provide everybody.
Chad, you should drop the alpha about Osmosis. This would be a good time.
That it, which part? Just that it sounds like it's going to be within a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Yeah, it sounds like it's, getting really close. There was an interesting clip from what was his name? Jack Zampolin, I think, who was saying like, yeah, like actually a lot of the code is actually done, which would allow, I believe first Rune would go out on IVC. Synths might be a little behind that. Plus there's like the cap sort of issue with the synths. I feel like where Thor synths on IBC will be really interesting is when you can have a lot of them. Because right now it's like you could have a Thor synth IBC BTC on like Osmosis or something, but if you can't get enough of that, I don't know. I don't know how that would work. Like, does that kind of change the price or something? Does it like lose peg and then it gets arbed back, I guess, but it would only be able to get so deep. But basically, yeah, just to clarify a little, the confusion around IBC and Thor chain typically comes from that the thing you can't do that won't be possible is there won't be IBC assets in Thor chain pools themselves. So that's like people kind of hear that part and then they're like, oh, Thor chain has nothing to do with IBC, which is also not true. It just means you can't have an IBC asset in the Thor chain pool. But Rune and the Thor synths will be IBC enabled, meaning they can go out, which is still super useful. And then DEX aggregators over time will totally solve like the swapping to and from IBC assets. Like as soon as you have Luna or Atom in a Thor chain pool, then all you need is an aggregator step to be able to swap from Bitcoin to or from an IBC asset. So as far as I can see it, it doesn't seem like a huge downside. And it's super bullish for like the utilization of Rune and Thorsense outside of Thorchain, which is really big.
Oh, that's awesome. So there'll be like direct connection to Osmosis, so people can just swap their Osmosis this month?
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, like we don't know an exact timeline, but it sounded like from what they were saying that it's closer than we thought. So, you know, maybe around a month from now, again, and maybe only Rune would go out first, but that would mean like,
right, yeah,
you could have like a Rune pool on Osmosis. So you'd be able to like take your native Rune and like IBC, like beam it out onto IBC, like through however that, I don't know exactly how like the actual IBC mechanism stuff works, but I guess it's sort of like wrapping to some extent. So then
yeah,
you have that.
Yeah. It's quite interesting, right? Like you'd be able to, and I don't know if like, if Anchor or other protocols could actually utilize that wrap rune, Chad. Like, I don't know, because I don't know the too much about in depth about IBC, but it would be interesting if for example, there was like some sort of method in which you could use that as collateral or even just right. to get additional yield or however that works.
Yeah, that would Osmosis. Be amazing. I think the problem is that Rune itself, like at least for the Anchor example, like back to the what we were talking about, Rune not being, there's no like single-sided staking or whatever. Like you can't yeah. have staked Rune. Whereas like what Anchor is doing is they're like taking staked assets and then they're taking that yield, which is funding Anchor Earn and on whatever. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe like long-term there'll be stuff like that. I wonder if there could be the possibility, like before when we thought that Thor Savings was based on synths, we were thinking like, oh, just hypothesizing. I was just wondering, like, you know, could you use like bonded effectively like synth vault Bitcoin, beam that out to IBC, have that as collateral on Anchor, where it's like yield earning BTC as Anchor collateral, which would be super cool. Now with like the newer design, it sounds like that's not actually the synths, but it'll be effectively the same as far as I understand. It'll be like some other kind of Thor BTC. So would be really cool, and hopefully we see stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be amazing. You know, I was just thinking, I guess there's not really much of a problem really if like, you know, synth Bitcoin is trading in the IBC network way higher than normal Bitcoin. I mean, that's not really, it's not like a stable coin that has to keep its peg, you know? So,
you know, yeah. But I also don't think it would be, because as soon as the ARB got good, you could just go back and redeem it for, or the other way around, I guess. Well, wait.
Yeah, I was just thinking of the world where the caps are still kind of there, you know?
Right.
You can't like mint more synthetic Bitcoin. It could for a period. I'd imagine eventually like stuff will be so deep in general that wouldn't happen. But, you know, even if it does happen right now, I suppose it wouldn't be a big issue.
True. Will be really cool to see IBC here. I think that could be big. And then, you know, hypothetically, if there's $1 billion of synthetic Bitcoin on Osmosis in time or whatever, just think about like the underlying mechanism for the Rune buy pressure and for the Rune price is kind of crazy. It's like you have the synth BTC. You have the synth BTC, but that's actually like doing a ton to incentivize Rune itself, which is insane. If people don't know that mechanism, it's because the synths are backed by the liquidity pool. So if you have $1 billion of synthetic Bitcoin, that would be redeemable technically through $500 million of real Bitcoin and $500 million of Rune in the native Thorchain liquidity pools. So that means that was $500 million of Rune buy pressure right there. And then that means half a billion of Bitcoin is in the pool, which has to be secured by another billion of Rune. So there's kind of like a 1:1.5 ratio when you're going from like taking real Bitcoin to minting a synth. Half of it goes to Rune, and then half of it has to be bonded by another 1x of node bond, if that makes sense. So it's pretty wild.
Yeah, and there's no other wrapped version of Bitcoin that has this kind of security guarantee. I mean, this is totally unique.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's different than wrapped because it's not just like locking one asset for one IOU asset. It's backed by this like fluctuating two asset liquidity pool. Chad explained this really well before, but it's like it allows it to hypothetically, if the synth or the wrapped asset were to like 1000x, now suddenly you have like more value on that chain than it's redeemable than the security there. So it becomes this like crazy security problem. Whereas with this, it would always scale in tandem because it's always going to be backed by 50% Rune no matter what. So if anything, that would just be pushing that up. Yeah, so it's a really cool model.
That's awesome. Thanks for dropping the alpha too with Osmosis. I'm going to tweet that out.
Totally. I told you like a few days ago, you might be able to find it, but there was like an interview and it was like the last 2 minutes of this video. And they were talking about it. So yeah, try to look for that. It was maybe like 3 or 4 days ago on my feed. But yeah.
Yeah, I think the team members, except for the person who said it, didn't realize that a lot of the like IBC and just because we're integrating Terra, it's just gonna be a lot easier for them to like do whatever they need to do to ensure it works. So that's good to see. And that's going to happen for other chains as well. Like as we integrate the first chain, you know, for example, within Avalanche or other ecosystems, the other, if there's other chains within that same ecosystem that need to be onboarded, it'll be a lot easier because most of the code is more or less the same depending upon each chain.
Totally. I just pinned that tweet, by the way, if people are curious to watch after this or something. But yeah, pretty cool.
Got a quick question, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely. How's it going?
Yeah, good. How about yourself?
Doing good.
Oh, amazing. So around the node bonding, there's this question that's lingering in the back of my mind, and I'm still trying to make sense of it. Is there, because obviously the node operators have to provide 2-to-1, is there an instance where they ultimately get priced out and it becomes, you know, the amount of node operators becomes quite small because everyone else has been priced out?
Yeah, I definitely think it's possible that, you know, not financial advice, but I mean, node operators could all have to be billionaires in the future, but they would probably be billionaires because they had all that Rune bonded already. but yeah, I mean, it's already like what at current pricing takes about somewhere around in dollar value, like $3.5 million
it's a lot
to be a node operator. Yeah. So that already, you know, limits you. And then that doesn't even factor in the node bond or the node wars, the bond wars that we're going to start seeing ramp up as we kind of hit like temporarily max number of nodes, you know, because we're going to stall out at either 100 or 120 temporarily for a bit. And at that level, then you'll have standby nodes competing to bond even more to get in. But yeah, you know, like long term, yeah, it'll be really interesting because it'll take a whole lot. But to the other part is the incentive pendulum always keeps that in check as well, right? So, you know, if there's not enough on the bond side, then that could reach a point where the liquidity pools just cap out because there's like the security hard cap, right? If there's only X number of value being bonded, then there's this hard cap, half that of the non-rune value in the liquidity pools. So that is like always a hard cap. But then as it gets close to that cap, what happens is the incentive pendulum is swinging towards the nodes, meaning there's all of this system income, right? From the swap fees, from slippage, liquidity, like from sends, like all the stuff that's feeding system income. And that's being split in a ratio between the nodes and the liquidity poolers. And if it gets into an underbonded state, then that would just mean becoming a node operator would become like even more lucrative. Theoretically, it could swing so far to one side that LPs would be getting zero and nodes would be getting all of it, which so then you'd get kind of like whoever could would manage to switch over to the node side. So it's kind of self-regulating in that regard.
Yeah, interesting. That's the consideration I had was that, you know, potentially in the future, you end up in a situation where all the, I guess, all the governance and all the power has filtered through to, you know, a very small handful of very rich people. I'm like, oh, that sounds like that's been done before. But I suspect that this has been thought about by people much smarter than myself. So I trust that it's all going to work out quite well. And I've been bagging up on Rune quite heavily myself. So very excited for what's happening.
Speaking of people who are smarter than us, Chad B just joined.
How's it going, guys? How are you?
Doing good.
Doing good. You?
I actually tested positive for COVID yesterday. So I'm
feeling
a little under the weather, but.
Oh man!
I'll try to mute my mic when I cough. So if I just go silent all of a sudden, that's probably the reason why.
Damn. Well, hopefully it's pretty mild and passes quickly. But
yeah,
hopefully. Yeah, for sure. What were some of the questions that we passed over because we were like, "Oh, Chad's that's a good question for Chad." Trying to remember now.
I think one was the question about Thor USD being just an internal thing and how some of the arbitrage is going to work there.
Right. So the question was about like if Rune could become only inflationary, and I was explaining how like Thor savings kind of swings that the other way, But I think the question was like, if you were to just like take UST and just like straight up swap it to Thor USD, which I'm not sure you even can without it having a normal liquidity pool. But yeah, maybe you can just expand on kind of all that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So the first thing is, yeah, you can absolutely swap it from UST to Thor USD or vice versa or any other asset for that matter. It doesn't really need to be arbitraged though, because the value of the pool, like the ratio between the amount of asset and room in the pool is just dynamically determined at the beginning of each block, and it's pulling that information from the other stablecoin pools like UST, BUSD, USDC, USDT. And so there's really no arbitrage opportunities for the most part. As theoretically, it's possible if you're within a certain same block, but you wouldn't have the information yet to be able to arbitrage it. Anyways, that's
so typical play. Hi, Chad. So adding on to the question, there's considering the similar bun mechanism with Thor UST and Rune and Luna UST and Luna. So let's say, somebody if you have the option to swap, not the arbitrage, just swap like 100 million UST to Thor UST. So it kind of, can make it can reduce, if somebody swap 100 million Luna UST to Thor UST. So if we have more Thor UST, then it kind of make reduces the supply of Rune as well and the Luna as well. So is this something I want to understand, if there is an option to swap this thing, so it kind of could, reduce the supply of both Luna as well as the Rune and make both the chain more stable and the tokenomics here more advanced like that.
I'm not sure if I understood the question there.
I mean, if somebody's swapping 1 million Luna UST, Terra UST to 1 million Thor UST. So if somebody is minting, 1 million Luna UST to swap to Thor UST, so basically it should reduce the supply of both Rune and the Luna. So,
well, it would not change the supply of Luna because the UST already exists. You're just adding UST to the UST pool. It's taking out Rune, and then the Rune is going into this virtual Thor UST pool where that Rune is burned, and then the Thor UST is minted on the other side of it. So the UST quantity will stay the same in that regard. There's no minting or burning within the UST, but there is minting and burning within Thor UST in that example.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, because it's happening on Thorchain has no ability to mint and burn USD or any other asset on any other chain.
So I've got a question that will piggyback off that, actually, thinking about this burn to minting mechanism that happens between Rune and Thor USD. If people are then able to switch out their Thor USD to UST, my first thought is that many people will probably take that UST, go to Anchor, deposit that for their 20%, interest APY. And so this becomes, at this point, and there's still not really enough collateral provided on Anchor to subsidize that, long-term self-sustainably. Is there some sort of synergy that's going to be in place where, will there be some way to even provide Rune as collateral? I don't know how it would work, but is there some way where rather than UST, plenty of UST being minted, which is great, drives the Luna price up and all that, but I'm thinking more about the sustainability mechanism of Anchor. Is there a way that there could be a synergy created where something from the Thor chain side is usable as collateral on Anchor?
Theoretically speaking, because they're both IBC chains, you could beam some Rune to Anchor and use that as collateral and something. I guess hypothetically speaking, that's possible. I doubt they would actually do that, to be honest with you. I think we spent months thinking about this idea of fixed rate income as what the Anchor protocol does. No matter how you slice it, there just has to be a subsidization somewhere. Somebody needs to subsidize it when it's not earning enough yield. The subsidization has to come from somewhere. It can be the treasury, it can be inflating the Rune coin. It could be a whole host of different, it could be LFG. It could be literally anywhere, but somebody has to do it. And so I don't think we were able to come up with a concept that to me felt like a long-term sustainable model of a fixed rate income. I mean, we thought of at least like 5 or 6 different ideas and concepts, but they weren't didn't feel ironclad to me.
Hey, and just one. Oh, sorry, you go, mate.
Thanks. Just a quick question. Sorry if this is not the right place to ask this, but there was something going on around yesterday about the Thorfy PDF, and was that a joke? I didn't get it. Thank you.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Chad.
Sure. Yeah. I kind of addressed this earlier on too, but I'll just say it again. Is like, it kind of got memed up quite a bit and spiraled out of control a little bit. It got a little bit funny, but the intention there was just for the core devs to kind of share this model with a few people, kind of just for a bit of like peer review before it kind of gets finalized and goes out there. So like the design docs are going to be soon, but this PDF thing became a meme for sure to some extent. Like a lot of this stuff has already been talked about, like stuff Chad is talking about right now. It's kind of like just putting the finishing polish on it before it's like, hey, here's the official design. So if you have anything to add, Chad, but yeah, sorry to anyone that like didn't like the meme or whatever, but like it kind of ended up going got a little funny for sure.
Yeah, the Thorfy PDF is a real thing. It was given out to maybe 10-ish individuals within the community to just review and think it over, and part of it was to get their ideas and comments on it. Part of it was to figure out what aspects of the document they found to be confusing in terms of the way things are phrased or explained, so that when we release it to the general public, we can make some edits so that it's more straightforward or it's more easy to understand. In part because what this DeFi kind of protocol is doing is structurally very different than anything we've ever seen before. And because of that, it requires more, cognitive cycles in a manner of speaking to actually comprehend what is happening, because it kind of flies in the face of what people said was possible before. And so people have a very kind of knee-jerk reaction of, this is nonsense. This could never work. This whole thing is like all this kind of, negative knee-jerk reaction responses. And so we want to make sure that like the document and was as clear as we can make it. We wanted to kind of connect with people like Grassroots Crypto, for example, to generate some like visual content. We want to put together some simulators or dashboards where you can kind of play with the numbers and kind of get like a hands-on experience to help the community comprehend the mechanics at play here. And so we didn't want to just kind of dump it and, whatever, kind of YOLO our way into it in a sense, but be a bit more calculated. And that's partially why the PDF was leaked first to some choice individuals. And then it'll eventually come out for the rest of the public. I don't know when exactly, but hopefully very soon.
I know there was a question before you joined, Chad, about iRune, because, of course we get asked, when Rune single-sided staking. The question was, what ways could we like make that productive? Because that's always my concern, right? I don't want single-sided Rune staking that's just going to inflate the supply and then, it's just going to do terrible things to the tokenomics. I really want to see like Rune in the single-sided form still be productive somehow.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely it in a nutshell. Like most other projects do not think that way. They just, you do a delegated proof of stake and then just mints more coins. And so it redistributes the wealth, redistributes the power, purchasing power away from the people who don't stake and then towards the people who do stake, which economically speaking makes no sense, especially in the long term. So we've never done delegated proof of stake or any kind of quote iRune thing in the past, because in order to do so, we want to make sure that it's contributing value to the network, either making the pools deeper or increasing the security of the network. And so we haven't really thought of a very clean way to do that with just Rune exposure by itself. I think the closest thing we have so far is this kind of idea of light nodes or vault nodes, where people can put up their Rune in smaller amounts. But even that requires like a little bit of KYC action. You have to KYC the person that you're staking your funds into, just to make sure they're not going to rug pull you or do anything, nefarious. Doing something protocol-wide that's built into protocol that's much more, safe than that. We haven't really quite thought of an approach yet that makes sense, but it's still always on my mind. It's always percolating in the back of my head of like, how can we do this? But I haven't figured out a way to do that. It actually makes sense for in terms of the profit, the project.
Doesn't the idea that I think was being named queued liquidity, like that kind of plays in, right? Like that's the idea of like the matchmaking of the LPs. And I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, queue liquidity is a different idea. I don't think it quite relates to Irune. It's just a way that people who want to provide liquidity on a single side, that they don't experience a slip. When you just put in just Bitcoin, you experience a slip as if you did a swap, so to speak, and then got the other asset and then provided liquidity. So queue liquidity is this idea that, like, you know, big Bitcoin whales can put in a lot of Bitcoin and then not experience that initial slip that happens when you do single side liquidity add.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's actually different than the idea that I had read into and thrown out a while back of like the idea of like, what if you could just take one side of the LP and only have exposure to that, and it's sort of like paired with the other asset somehow. But yeah, I know it gets economically confusing, like the security of that, right?
Yeah, you can't really do that within a pool per se. We even talked about the idea internally about we have synthetic assets where you have a synthetic Bitcoin, these kind of things, which you're adding liquidity to the pool on a single side without taking the yield. And that creates, you know, a kind of offside leverage for the LPers. And we explored the idea for a while of doing a synthetic room where you can provide liquidity, or rather just like, you know, have a synthetic room that balances the other side of the other asset. I mean, you actually found out after some analysis that really doesn't work out so well, and it doesn't actually quite help with the network very much at all. So we kind of stepped away from that concept. Yeah, I think we're all still open to the idea of like Irune, but we just need to figure out the approach that provides real value. I'm very much against this idea of like it's one of the very easy ways you can figure out whether a project sucks or it's a really good project. Is look at the inflation style. If it's inflating for the purpose to launch the network, that's fine. That's exactly what Bitcoin does. But if it's going to this long term thing where it's like inflating always, and you're trying to like, it's just, and then at some point you get this like shadowy economics thing where you're just like, you think you're telling people they're going to gain a 20% yield by, you know, staking their assets into one of the validators, and in reality they're not. But people don't realize that because they don't actually think through the math of it, and so. You convince somebody they're getting a higher yield than they actually are, and that becomes what I call shadowy economics. You know, just this kind of idea that you're trying to trick people, which is just not the way to go at it for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I never quite thought of it this way, but it's really just a psychological game, because either you're like Rune is already accruing the value of the network. It's just like, do you want to see that in terms of your quantity of Rune increasing at the expense of everybody, or do you want to just leave that the way it is and let it accrue value the way it already does? It's like you can't just make new value from nowhere. It's just like a redistribution problem, I guess.
Right. So this is one of the ideas that I think people sometimes miss, is that like whenever you mint a coin in any network, doesn't matter what we're talking about, you're never adding value. You're only redistributing value. Right, it's like you can't create energy in a matter of speaking. You can only transform it for one form or the other. And so the only way you can actually like create value is to create buy pressure, right, on the asset itself. That's how you actually add value to the ecosystem. Is you create buy pressure. People acquire it and they buy it and they don't sell it. Right. That's how that works. Whenever you're minting the coin, though, you're just moving around value. Somebody's winning and somebody's losing. This is always a zero sum game in these circumstances, and people don't really think about that too much. And in the scenario where like you have 100% of the people are staking into their node or whatever, then you're, you know, earning a 20% yield on a 20% inflation rate. At that point, it's just complete hogwash. Like it's complete nonsensical stuff, and people might be falling for it because they're like, oh yeah, 20% yield is great. But like, no, you're not making any money at all, and they're just tricking you.
Yeah, it's kind of the same as just doing nothing if it's purely coming from inflation. It's just diluting everybody, right? And you're right, just increasing your balance. But if it's coming from some sort of reward, like some kind of fee, buyback, redistribution, then it could be, we were talking a little bit, I think it was Noah that came up with, how did we get there? It was like through, I think it had to do with how there will be the Thor USD vault and like the idea of like, kind of like the fees around the peg protection. And if like that could be something that would fund Rune instead of Thor USD vault. I don't know if that would be even make a drop in the bucket, but kind of an interesting concept. I don't know if that vault needs to be there for some other peg reasons, but
no, the vault doesn't need to be there at all. Technically, like if you wanted to, instead of putting those that value in the at USD vault, you could just burn it, right, and then distribute all of that that kind of value amongst all holders of the asset. Generally speaking, we don't do that in most cases, just because we want to reward the people who are, you know, doing something and participating in the network. So in this case, rewarding people who burn their rune and mint Thor USD and then hold Thor USD for periods of time is, it's nice for the network, right? It increases the value of rune, which makes the pools deeper, which makes the bond more secure. All these things can happen as a, you know, result of that. And that's why Anchor does this 20% fixed rate yield, is it's trying to create a demand center, a reason why you would want to hold UST other than just the like, oh, it's a stable coin, and just holding it because it's a stable coin. They want you to have a reason to buy it and hold it and acquire it and burn as much Luna as possible. That's why they do that, right? And that's a good plan. Like, it makes a lot of sense that you're trying to drive people to burn Luna to this 20% yield on a stable. Is like, that's a great deal, right? The USD vault, I'm not sure what the yield of that's going to be actually be in the end. The pool itself is going to be very, very large, very deep. So the amount of fees it's going to collect is probably very little. But at the same time, it's also going to be, you know, participating in a lot of swaps and trades, just because it'll probably become the most utilized stable coin in the network, which means arbitrage bots will likely use that because it has the cheapest fees for them, even more so than since. And so they might actually end up using that as their primary kind of asset. And if that's the case, then you'll see more trades and swaps than Thor USD. Whether it'll be, you know, a 1% yield in the end of the day or a 20% yield in the day, I actually have no idea. And I'm not terribly concerned what that value is quite yet. We'll just let the market just kind of speak to what it is, and then we'll adjust if we feel like we need to adjust.
Will that be just like Thor savings, and that it's just like straight up related to how much is in that vault? Like, it would start really high and just gradually let the market set it very low? Or
yeah, it would probably start very high for the first few people that came in. But the market, the free market, will determine what the actual yield should be of this system. If it's like 1% yield, for example, you know, maybe you don't think that's enough. You don't think it's really worth your time or effort, so to speak. So you're going to sell, and then you're going to go somewhere else. And then the 1% goes to 2%, right? And maybe enough people think 2% is enough, then they're going to sit there and get that 2% yield, right? Or the free market in the end determines what the actual correct yield is for this pool, right? Or this not even pool, it's a vault, right? And I don't know what that number is going to be. That the free market will tell us.
Yeah, it makes sense. A few people have had their hands up for quite a while, so let's try to get through. Let's go Financial Fungi, Knight, well, basically everyone. Let's start with those two. Financial Fungi.
Cool, thanks. What's up, guys? My question was just probably pretty basic for anyone who's totally understands how Thor Swap works. I understand that everything gets routed through the Rune token, but what I'm struggling with is just understanding how you can go from native asset to native asset. Like, does that happen through the Rune token, or like, what's the mechanism that allows you to go from like native BNB to native BTC? Like, how exactly does that work, and how come Thor Swap is like the only project that's been able to do that? I mean, like, you have Rango and stuff, but that's just a DEX aggregator. And like, I mean, like, is bridging happening behind the scenes, or like, I just don't understand. I know it's more simple. It seems more simple than everything else, but yeah, I'm just not understanding exactly how that's happening.
Chad Thor, you want to take this one?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of both really simple and really complicated at the same time. And one thing just to throw out is check out Grassroots Crypto on YouTube, because he has really, really good breakdowns of like the technical background if you really want to understand what's going on. But you know, on a more simplistic level, you basically have these nodes that are bonding rune collateral in order to be able to protect non-rune assets. So ThorChain basically owns wallet addresses on all the various native chains. And every asset has a liquidity pool with Rune. So you're right, what you were touching on, like essentially it's routing through Rune because every asset is paired with Rune as well. And those pools are all constantly rebalancing. So basically what you're doing is if you want to swap Bitcoin to Ethereum, you're sending Bitcoin in with a very particular message telling you what you expect to get out. So your Bitcoin goes into that pool, the Bitcoin Rune pool, then, you know, arbitragers will come in to kind of maintain price and stuff like that. And then your Ethereum comes out the other end back to you kind of as it was instructed on the way in. So kind of quite simple in that regard. Like basically ThorChain itself is monitoring all these various chain addresses and has like automations built in to be like, when this is happening, that's going to happen. So that's kind of how it works in very, very simplified.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I kind of get that. So it holds wallet addresses on all those different chains. Is ThorChain itself, is that a Cosmos chain or is it its own thing? Or I heard you guys mentioning like, is it IBC or is it, what is it exactly?
Yeah, it's a Cosmos chain. It doesn't currently support IBC, but it is something that I've been working with Jack over at the team over there, IBC team, to integrate with. So we'll hopefully see IBC integrated with ThorChain in the near future, maybe the next month or two, hopefully. Something I actually wanted to do this week was to actually work out some of the issues with IBC and fix some things at the Thor node to make it possible. But me having COVID may not work out in that regard, but yes, it is a Cosmos chain, and IBC will be integrated at some point in the future.
So, is Rune like? Can you use Rune on like Kepler wallet if it's Cosmos, or does that need to be IBC to do that? Or I'm still kind of getting familiar with all the.
I don't
Cosmos.
Think Kepler works no. with ThorChain.
It doesn't. Yeah. It does not right now.
Yeah, to my knowledge. That's because the message handler. The way that the message is structured is slightly different on ThorChain than it is on a standard Cosmos chain. Mainly because we created our own custom like transfer code rather than using the one that's built into Cosmos. There's some reasons why we did that. And so it's a little bit different, and therefore Kepler doesn't really work with it out of the box.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, because I'm still kind of like wrapping my head around how like Terra is like, you know, Cosmos built on Cosmos, and like you can also load it up on a Kepler wallet and all that. But so now Rune is also built on Cosmos, but it's been tweaked in a way that it's not like as easily integrated into that as like Atom is and UST and all that right. stuff.
That's because ThorChain's code is very specialized. It doesn't really use a lot of like the vanilla features of Cosmos. It kind of rolled its own for a whole host of different reasons for different modules and these kind of things. So it's a very much a highly modded version of Cosmos in many respects. And so because of that, it kind of creates that kind of issue that you're referring to.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the sound of that because it makes, you know, if I'm going to invest in Rune, it makes me feel like it has a competitive advantage. It didn't just take the cookie cutter approach to what you could do on Cosmos. So it sounds good. I think that's all I have. So I'll move down. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part one of a two-part multi-chain live space talking about Rune, Luna, all things ThorChain, and more. Recorded on Monday, March 14th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of the Ether was also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes, and check them out online at WeFund.app. This episode of the Ether was also brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects, and check them out online at glowyield.com. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay. Checking that replay, sing along, and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody want to rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday, and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, huge sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around three quarters of a cent to listen to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist. Pennies per play. Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson. Living in the eighth dimension might be worth a little mention. Living in the Great Depression, got a real regal feel. Reeling in another sucker fish out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw shit, now you only got two left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointing too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music.
Terra Spaces.